Hi, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jason, the curator of the Army Showcase. It's a cold and rainy day outside, so let's stay inside and brainstorm some ideas for HeroScape in this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield! Alright everyone, welcome back to Season 2 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And well, in front of us here, we're at our gaming table, so we're not in a normal location out there, the fancy, well, quote, fancy, unquote, backdrop. Instead, we're actually here with a whole bunch of HeroScape pieces in front of us. So, in addition to some other game pieces we'll get to in a minute, but what we're doing here is basically doing a brainstorming session. We both set out to create some different ideas for different ways to play HeroScape, integrate other figures and such, so we're going to talk about those and basically toss some ideas out to you guys so you can get started and kind of run with them, expand on them, come up with your own ideas, and make cooler and better stuff. At least that's the idea behind it.
Mm-hmm. Like you just said, the HeroScape is endless. You can come up with endless scenarios for this game. That's why I love it so much.
First off, here's a quick recap of the state of HeroScape, because remember we talked a little bit about back at the start of the year, people were freaking out because there have been no new releases, things got delayed, and messy. So, just in case you haven't heard by now, the whole deal that's going on is Hasbro was originally in charge of this game, and Hasbro owns a bunch of companies, such as Wizards of the Coast, and Wizards of the Coast, in turn, owns Avalon Hill. So, for whatever reason, I guess maybe to change the little marketing of the game up a little bit, Hasbro is giving control of HeroScape over to Avalon Hill. And so the new stuff's going to start coming out in June, with the new expansion packs, the new terrain sets, all set to come out in June, which the ones that were set to come back out at the end of last year, like in December or something like that. So they're still coming out, and according to an interview with them, make it sound fancy, according to an interview on HeroScapers.net, is it .net or .com?
Just Google HeroScape, you'll find it.
Yeah. One of them is a good site, one of them is a link farm. I think HeroScapers.net is the right one. So, I'll put it in the show notes, but yeah. So far, Avalon Hill is saying, or I don't know if it's Avalon Hill or Wizards of the Coast, whoever's controlling this whole thing, is saying they're going to basically keep the stuff the same. It's going to be same style gameplay, same style product releases with the theme boosters. No random boosters. That would make me very angry if they ever did that. So I guess the game's going to stay pretty much the same when it gets relaunched effectively this middle of this year. So we'll probably cover that when that happens. But
nice. For
now, what we're going to do is give you a few scenario ideas. Ryan's got a set of ideas. I've got another set of ideas. And also, since there aren't any new figures coming out until about June, why don't we take figures from other games and integrate them into HeroScape? We're going to do that later in the show, but Ryan's got, it looks like, some Lord of the Rings figures there from Games Workshop's Lord of the Rings game. And, of course, I've got over here some Tyranid and Tau Empire pieces from Games Workshop's Warhammer 40,000 universe. So, let's get started, because I've been talking long enough. I'm going to hand off to Ryan, and he can go ahead and start talking about his ideas for scenarios.
Okay,
I should say it's kind of like a tournament-esque. We're going for kind of a standardized tournament-esque scenario.
Yeah, and it is strictly a tournament scenario that I have. I've built this before, played this before. Want to tweak them a little bit, but basically you have... You build up teams of four sets of cards. Like, doesn't have to be figurines, but card figurines. And they all have to be underneath 500 points. Mm-hmm. And so you set up, like, whoever you have together, 8 people, 15 people, it doesn't matter, and get the teams together.
Ideally, some kind of even number for bracketed style tournament?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, if you can. Yeah. Yeah, this is basically what it is, a bracket style tournament. And then you set up the stages, which we'll do that later. I don't know when you want to do it, but we'll do
probably after you're done explaining all the rules, we'll do some speed building.
And that's one thing I love about HeroScape is you can set up anything.
Yes.
But I like what I have set up here is probably not going to be able to do all of them, but I have a fire and ice level, which is lava, and then ice, which is one of the hardest games to play, because if you don't have characters that have a fire ability to where they can adapt to it, then you're pretty much facing the terrain and the enemy that you're facing. So that makes it kind of difficult. And
since there's only one card that has resistance to lava, or maybe at least
there's,
one card.
There's two.
Have.
I think
two?
I think there's
that's right, the giant Corsi.
The Bernac.
Bernac, yeah.
Yeah.
So, there's only two of those, so chances are you are going to be having a heck of a time.
Yeah, yeah. And then I have a ruins level, which is basically one that's a little bit bigger. And make sure to keep, it's best to keep these terrains small, just so, because you have, like, four teams. You don't want, like, a lot of distance to cross in order for them to meet each other and fight. It's basically what this is, just a hack-and-slash thing to where it's like, okay.
Do you pose any time limits on the games or anything? Or
nope, just no time limits. Just
one side's dead?
Yep, till one side's dead. And then also I have a swamp level and then just a plain level to where it's just plain ground. There's nothing on it. Which makes things not as interesting as they could be, but you don't have to face the terrain then.
Different style of combat.
Exactly.
So how do you go about choosing who fights where?
Who fights where? Well, that's one thing that I've mulled about. I have a way for it, but I'm probably going to change it. What I have right now is, according to the dice roll, each team gets set a number, one through whatever, mm-hmm. whatever team, and then the team players pick, like, say, numbers out of a hat, and numbers will be on a piece of paper.
Okay.
And that's what team number they'll be on. And let's just say, just for name's sake, you have eight players.
Okay.
And you got eight teams. Because that's what I have it for. You have players pick teams, and you say team one through eight. And one more thing, you got to make sure that your team isn't the same as somebody else's. Like, you can only have, like, say, a Morrow team, and no one else can have a Morrow team. But you can have another team that serves Ugotar, like a Wolf team, or a Kiri team, or and for the good guys, it's a little bit easier to do. You can have, like, an Elf team, or stuff like that. It makes it a little bit easier. But like I said, if you have eight teams and you pick, say, you pick numbers out of a hat, and according to the dice roll, it's pretty easy if you got, say, like a 20-sided die, and then just say, that won't work for that. But
it won't work. What's the problem?
8, 16. You can go all the way up to 16, but if it goes over that number, like, say, you got 17, you'd have to just have to re-roll it. So.
I mean, if you had other dice laying around, you could use, like, an 8-sided die if you have 8 teams, 10-sided die if you have mm-hmm. 10 teams, but HeroScape only gives you the 20-sided die and these useless combat dice for that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Let's get creative with those. But keep talking.
Yeah, but anyway, so, yeah, you can choose teams by rolling the dice and who faces who. And then one cool thing about these terrains is you can make one side, like, when you finish the terrain, you choose what side the team will have to start on. And no matter what the terrain is or whatever, you're going to have to place the figures on there. And you have to decide that before you even start playing. And that's how it will be for the whole tournament. But when it comes time to choose, like, which side your team's going to be on, mm-hmm. like, you know what team you're going to face, and now it comes down to what field they're going to be playing on, and that can be used for whatever dice roll you want to use it for. I have say you got say you have four terrains for eight players.
Okay.
You just pick a terrain for a number, and, like, just say one through four.
I should state it's probably assumed as you're going, but you should have one terrain for two players.
Yes.
It's just to be assumed that they're all one-on-one death matches.
Practically, yes.
Okay. So just randomly choose the sides that are on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then once you've basically randomly chosen all the stuff, you're ready just to fight it out, right? You just one-on-one fight to the death, and then people who win go into the next round, the people who lose, they can do whatever they want.
Well, and the way you choose sides is, that piece of paper that I told you that you use to pick the numbers out of the hat? What you do is you take those two pieces of paper, you mix them around, and then you just place one on each side. So that gives you a random opportunity. Mm-hmm. Or you can just toss them in a hat, take them out, then one player takes the number and then puts it down on whatever side.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, you can do it a lot of ways, so there's not really an indefinite way to do it.
So let's go ahead. So I guess all that's left is build a terrain now?
Yeah, let's build some terrain.
All right.
My favorite part.
So, what you do is, basically, before the battle starts, each player is going to construct the battlefield. This is intended for two 400-point battles. So, it's small, quick, ripping each other, kill people really fast, really quick, and start the timer. And so, I got to know how long I'm talking for. So, each player needs to bring a stack of hexes that are, there's basically 100 hexes in this pile. So, I got a simple example pile. This is all pretty much basic terrain, but if you get crazy, you can mix in some of that lava and the ice and water. Oh, water's over here. I do have water in the pile. So, yeah, so you know, you can get some crazy layouts. So, how it works then is, in addition to bringing 100 basic hexes worth of pieces to the table, each person's going to have to bring another 7 hex tile sheet here that's going to become their starting location. So, we'll get to that later. And what will happen then, also, you need 3 of these three normal combat dice, maybe 4, depending on how you want to do it, because how this works is, after you place a terrain tile down, or a set of terrain tiles, which I'll explain in a minute, because I'll explain that right now, so it makes more sense. So what you do is, oh man, I'm so disorganized right now.
That's why it's better to explain these, just, you know, do something on a website and explain them.
It really is. I had it all written down, too, and it's totally just threw out the window.
Yeah, it's like...
Okay.
It's like better just to type it down on the website and just show it there.
First off, you're going to go ahead and choose which sides of the field you're going to start on. So you pick opposite sides of the field. Each player rolls a d20. The highest roll is going to go first. So then basically you alternate back and forth placing terrain tiles until either A, you're out of terrain tiles, or B, you're out of, what are these called, the deployment dice. So I'll get to it in just a minute, which are those 3 combat dice I was talking about a minute ago. So to place a terrain tile down, you have 2 options here. Either place a single terrain tile down that's either has a number of hexes that are either 10 or greater. So, like for example, I'm holding up one of these standard 24 hex sheets right now. So you can either place down basically one large terrain tile down, or you can place any number of small terrain tiles so the total number of hexes placed down is equal to 10. So if you could place this nice big large 24 hex one down, or say you can place down a 7 and a 3 for 10, or maybe you want a 7, a 2, and a 1. Maybe you want 5 2 pieces. Maybe you want 10 water pieces, 10 single water pieces. You have a pretty wide selection of what you can do. And the rules for placing them down is simply, if you're the first person to place a terrain tile down, you can place it wherever you want. Just set it down the board, you know, whatever. For each person after each tile after that, it has to either be placed in such a way that it connects to an existing tile, so you can't create two little islands. It has to be one landmass that's constantly spanning out. Or that terrain piece can be placed on top of another existing terrain piece in such a way that it does not hang off any terrain tile, so it has to be completely self-contained within the piece you're placing it down, so you can't go ahead and kind of have it hang off the edge here. And also, the places you're covering up have to be all the same level. So, for example, a neat little trick could be you have, say, 2 larger terrain tile pieces down, and maybe you got a river of lava running in between there, kind of screw the person up. The other player can't come and cover up the lava with another terrain piece because it's not the same level. So, or if you really want to get fun, when you build a nice big high mount up, so you got opponents got someone to stand on. If you want to mess them up, you put one nice lava piece right on top of that super high mountain, so they can't use that to bombard you.
Now I got a question.
Sure.
What about can you attach ruin building features? Or I know that there's some bridge.
The bridge
objects you can connect to.
Can't
be used.
I don't explicitly say you can't. I guess it's just a matter of would one of these pillars, which has a foundation, a wall segment kind of to it, and then a top. Is that one terrain piece, that three terrain pieces? Mm-hmm. You really just got to decide among yourselves how you want to do it. But there's no reason why you couldn't do that. But then I guess are ladders terrain pieces to get up there or what? So
I mean, but if you use bridges, that usually spans a gap for something. So would that that rule doesn't really apply to that? I mean, that rule applies only if you're not using, a terrain piece that actually does that type of thing.
Yeah, so you could use, here's, the bridge. We don't have the kit, but there is a bridge kit you can buy that why not?
Okay.
That's what it's designed to do, so, okay. And so the idea there is to create a terrain that's obviously favorable to you and hostile to the enemy. Like I was saying, if you have a lot of range guys, build some easy accessible mountains near your side so you can climb up there and get a nice range into the attack and defense bonus. Or say the opponent's got a lot of melee guys, kind of built kind of a hedgerow setup, where you basically have a whole bunch of little terrain pieces that are set up so Pearson either has to go over them wasting movement points, or around them wasting movement points to engage your forces. Or you could use some lava pieces and water to kind of channel them into an area to kind of make them into a Bundy cluster to use your cluster bombs attacks that some guys have and blow things up. That's why I kind of like the whole idea of it, how you just kind of, not only now is moving tactics, building army tactics, but now building terrain tactics all comes into it. And that's where, oh, grab the deployment dice. See, I'm totally disorganized. So after you place the set of terrain tiles down, you got these little deployment dice here. You can go with three or four, depending on how much you want to, what you want to do. And you roll all the dice. If any one of them comes up with a blunt, something that's not a shield or a skull, which on the normal dice is going to be blank, on some of the special faction dice is going to actually be the symbol of
the Xandar symbol, yeah, or the Uhtar symbol. Yeah.
You remove one die from your set. So every time you do that, you keep rolling dice. If ever you get in a situation where the last die you roll comes up with something other than a skull or shield, you are no longer allowed to place any more terrain pieces down.
Oh, really?
So you may not actually deploy all your 100 terrain tiles. So, because that way, initially, I consider what pieces would you rather deploy more importantly first.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some of the larger pieces. But any,
that's interesting.
Yes, so you have to, every time you place terrain tiles down, you have to deploy at least one terrain tile. Ideally, but you can deploy up to one large one or a combination of small ones to add up to 10 hexes. And then when it's all said and done with, you each take your 7-piece hex tile. So when either all these terrain tiles have been placed, or one player's out of terrain tiles, the other player has no more deployment dice left, and so they can't place anything new, or both players are out of deployment dice, they can't place anything new, you each place down your 7 hex starter thing in such a way that basically you're as far away from each other as possible. So you obviously, if you kind of think of the outside of the board, that's kind of like a sort of an approximate circle. You place them on opposite ends of the circle, in whatever corner you start, you're on. So hopefully that kind of makes sense of how that whole terrain tile works out.
I think one thing we're learning from this is to actually just write the stuff down on the web page, and because even though we love doing this, on a podcast, it just. I mean, and when we were talking about it, we're like, oh yeah, let's do this, because this will be fun, and we're just like, no, this is really confusing. It's better just to type it up on the website and just show it to you there.
We could just be like this, for all the college students out there, if you ever have a class where we got to do presentations, and you've always got, you could be that one person that always drives you crazy, where all they do is they get up and they give a presentation, they just read off their PowerPoint presentation, we sit here. After playing down their terrain, the player rolls their deployment dice. If any dice show something other than a shield or a skull, remove one deployment die. If a player has no deployment dice remaining, they cannot place any more pieces of terrain on the board. And it goes on like that, and it just drives me nutty. But so it's either you screw up like crazy like we're doing right now, or you're really, really boring. I don't know. Maybe screw up a little more entertaining for people, hopefully. That would be
possibly. So, we'll get to building. Building will be fun, because we'll fast forward, our arms will move really fast, and that'll be...
Okay, yes. So...
That's what you're waiting for anyway,
yes,
I'm sure.
Yes, that's what we're waiting for anyway. So, we get to the actual combat. You deploy your guys in such a way that you have to fill up your 7-hex starting thing first. After that, you guys kind of spill onto the board however you want. But you got to basically expand out in terms of deployments. You can't, put a guy way over the other side of the board or something. They all have to start... initiating your 7 hexes, and then as close to the 7-hex starting spot as possible when you have extra guys that spill over. And the gameplay, just you go, and you play the gameplay as normal. These gameplays are designed to be really fast, with a maximum time limit of 30 minutes. But the left
house, okay.
And wow. Screwing around, 400 points, you play pretty quickly, you get pretty darn close to finishing the game in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. As long as no one's being a jerk and stalling. If they are, they lose the game. Because I was messing around last time, it came down to the last roll, and the guys got the last roll and killed somebody and won the match because of that. So when the game ends, either A, one side is completely annihilated, or B, when time expires. And when time expires, whoever is currently performing an action, they get to go ahead and finish their action up. So if they've already said, I'm going to move my knights, they get to finish up their action after time expires. So, when the time expires, they get to finish up whatever the player was doing. And how points work determines who wins the game. You basically have three classes of cards at the end of the game. You have a class where the card is undamaged. If your opponent's card is undamaged, you score no points for it. If your opponent's card is damaged, either by the hero character that's taken a hit, or a squad card that's lost at least one figure, you could earn half points for the kill that, for doing the damage to that card. If the card is completely
destroyed, you earn points from that card.
Oh yeah, you're in the point. You earn half the point value of the card.
Okay.
Yes. So if you at least damage somebody, you at least get half the point value of that card. And we're calling these damage points. I'll explain in a minute what that means. And if you kill a character, say it's a hero, you do all the wounds to it, or it's a squad where you wipe out all the figures in the squad, you get full points to that card in terms of full damage points.
So strategically, it would be best to have...
Wipe out as many people as possible.
Well, have lower points on your card, because you said it's figures for up to 400, or it can be 400 or lower?
400 or lower, yes.
Okay. So yeah, strategically, it might be better to have figures that have lower points.
Maybe we should say you gotta get close. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Because also you consider spreading the damage around. Because if you remove one figure from each squad, you get half the score. Versus trying to concentrate on eliminating one hero or something like that. Mm. But yeah, so lots of little points can be making things messy and things. So how that works then is basically whoever scores the most damage points basically gonna win the battle. There's some more detailed points rules, but I'm talking too long. I'll put those on the website, and you can read those there if you're really curious to see how it all ends. So that's about it. Okay. So do you want to start building stuff now?
Are we going to talk about our figures first?
We're going to do it first. Let's build stuff first. Do a nice little transition in between. So we're going to build some terrain now.
I really wanted to clear this. I really wanted to clear this stuff out of the way, though, to give me more room.
Oh, well, let's do that.
Okay.
So we're gonna build some more terrain now, and then we'll get to talking about our custom rule figures, our custom rules, and custom stats. And I can't stop. I should stop talking now.
Yeah, let's just
let's
go.
Build terrain.
Let's go.
All right.
Okay, so there you have it.
Until I get back walking over, then we just keep talking, right?
There you have it.
All right. Okay, so there we have it. Okay, you do take it over.
Okay, so there we have it. There we have it. Okay, can I just say it again?
Why not?
There
it's been
we
a disaster
have
already
it.
Of an episode one, and make it even worse. All right, so we've got our terrains built up. We showed you a little fun dancey techno music. Everything's all built up. I don't know whatever music we're going to use. Brave. Okay. So, there's some sample terrains, how I use them for different game systems we have. Why don't you start off with your Lord of the Rings figures, since you have them readily available, and I put my Warhammer stuff over here. So
okay, I'll start.
Start with, say, do a couple figures, and I'll do a couple of mine, and we'll go back and forth.
Well, I'll do some of the easiest that you could probably put into HeroScape really well. Gimli and Legolas. For those of you who don't know the Lord of the Rings story very well, they start out as pretty much, I'd say, enemies or rivals at best at the beginning of the movie and the book. And at the very end, they become the bestest of friends. So just as, like, say, if you want to use a special ability, like for these two guys when it comes to HeroScape, you can have something like a friendship bonding or something like that, to where if they're adjacent to each other, they each receive like a couple additional attack dies or something, or something like that. You know, just spice things up a little bit. And then as far as attack and defense goes, I'd say keep it level to what they were before as much as you can in their own miniature game. You can adjust things accordingly because you don't want Gimli to have like 8. Attack points and start hacking away at people. That's just not going to be working. So make it reasonable for the HeroScape universe, and make it to, like, because you do have dwarves in the HeroScape universe. So match it kind of up to what they're at, and then Legolas the same thing, because you have Silvaris in HeroScape. So I'd say if you'd want to give Legolas a range, give it 9, just like Silvaris, because he's probably just about as good.
Silvaris is probably supposed to be Legolas.
Yeah.
He's probably what he's supposed to be.
In a sense, yes.
See, they rip off every other HeroScape, kind of rips off a lot of other popular culture things.
Mm-hmm.
The Matrix.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Okay, keep talking.
Brain thing. I went on Amazon when you were going to get tapes, and I saw they do have a Marvel Universe thing.
Oh, the Marvel HeroScape?
Yeah.
Marvel Hero.
That'd be a cool thing to get. Yeah, anyway, that was just a brain fart. And then, like, you'd say you have normal characters, like the orcs, like Orokai. I'd probably give him, since he is stronger than just a regular orc, I'd probably give him, like, a 3 or 4 attack. Mm-hmm. And then for defense, since he is, like, Heavenly Shield, I'd probably give him like a 3 defense. And then like with a Moria Orc, like this is a Moria Archer, I'd probably give the Archer like a range of probably like 4 or 5. And then his attack probably like 2 or 3 attack dice. Not
Goblins
much.
Tend to be crappy
archers. Yeah, and then his defense, then the Moria Archer, his defense would probably be like maybe 1 or 2 defense dice, just because...
So they're cheap little guys.
Yeah, they can be taken out really easily. Like, Legolas can just be standing and go...
Yeah, should happen. Doesn't happen too often in the actual Lord of the Rings game, but it should happen like that.
Yeah, well, that's why it's send these characters over to Heroescape, then you make it happen on Heroescape, then. And Gimli, I'd probably give him like a strong like 4 regular attack dice and 4 regular defense dice, just because he's one of them, you know, strong, well to the ground.
He's pretty much a tank.
His movement I'd probably cut down though just a little bit, since he is heavily laden. I'd probably give him like 1 or 2 movements.
Oh, what's it?
Probably.
Oh, okay.
Because I mean, you're reading the books. He's laden down with axes and stuff, and you see in the movie it is hard for him to go for long distances.
Okay.
So yeah, you know, it's just, you know, something fun twist into Heroescape. I mean, if that's what you want to do, you can make it something completely different. That's how I'd probably do it.
Okay, well, I'll jump in for a few. Yeah, a few more characters there, so I'll jump in for a few, then I'll go back to you.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna start with the Tyranids. So obviously, if you're not familiar with Warhammer 40,000, the Tyranids are your...
And we're having phone calls right during the podcast,
yes,
too.
Crap.
It's like, you don't want me to have my phone on the podcast, but he has his phone on the podcast.
Well, the difference is mine's CDMA. It doesn't interfere with the auto equipment, where you use GSM interference. Apparently, the domain I want to purchase is taken. Crap. Okay. So anyway, back to the real stuff. The Tyranids are kind of your generic insect, reptilian race. They swarm lots of little guys. Think the Bugs, the Starship Troopers, or the Zergs, all calling the same lines. So the Tyranid Warriors are kind of little bigger guys. They would be a common hero, because they can actually take multiple wounds, but they would function individually. So that was just for kicks. I gave them a speed of 6, because in Warhammer 40K, everybody moves 6 inches for whatever reason. Range, they have... Now, obviously, all the Tyranid figures can be equipped all sorts of different ways. So this particular guy here has Scything Talons and the Death Spitter.
Nice.
So in close combat, he's absolutely vicious. The Scything Talons lets him attack a lot more frequently. So I'd say he, being an absolute beast of a guy, he gets 4 attacks in close combat, so essentially he has a range of 1 with 4 attacks, a defense of 4, and a life of 2, because he's a little bit tougher than a typical soldier. So that's why they function as basically individual common heroes, because they have to be able to move around and be able to take 2 life, or, you know, basically every true figure in Heroescape so far only takes 1 damage. With the Death Spitter, how that thing kind of works is basically... A moderate ranged weapon, but it's got a little bit of an explosion to it. So it's a minor explosion attack. So when he targets somebody, the main guy would have, it's a range of 8, I said. It'd have 2 attack dice for the main target, then each adjacent target would have 1 attack dice against it. So you have to roll each hit separately, and you know, roll defense dice separately, but it's a very small minor explosion attack. And I you have to experiment with the points. I said around 40 to 50 for a single figure. It's, you know, it takes a while to play around and come up with final values. But next up, the Ormagons.
Especially when you're just making this stuff up.
Yes, I wrote these guys up this morning, so.
Yeah, well, I was going to write some of this stuff, but I'm just like, I had other issues, and yeah, I got heavily distracted.
The Ormagons are small, fast, and rip people up like crazy. They have lots of talons. They leap really far in the battle and just tear things up. So they have a speed of 6, so that's their basic speed. But then they also, in terms of close combat, they have a range of 1 like normal and 3 attack dice. They're pretty wussy, only 2 defense dice, so they can be killed pretty easily. And they're obviously they're deployed in squads of 4 with 1 life per figure. But the cool thing that makes them fast, are they have the Fleet of Claw ability, which you can pretty much translate almost right from Warhammer 40K in that after you move, you then get to roll a d6, so you have to pull a d6 in this game, and you get to move that many more spaces. So they can potentially move up to 12 spaces in one turn if you get really good. These guys, literally in Warhammer 40K, can almost always attack from outside a lot of those weapons range and just jump on them and rip them into shreds. So in addition to that Fleet of Claw ability, we give them the Leap ability. So, because these guys have the ability to jump really far and attack people, if you end your movement within 3 hexes of an enemy, you can jump. This is also after Fleet of Claw. So you move a Fleet of Claw, and if you end within 3 hexes of an enemy, you get to jump up close and just tear into them and immediately attack them.
Cool.
So that's their leap ability. And also, they have the charge ability. So if they begin their turn not in contact with an enemy soldier, or not adjacent to enemy figure, when they actually engage somebody, they get an additional attack dice. They get 4 attack dice if they start the turn not engaged, because they're rushing in. So not only do they get, you know, full of their claws, but just the sheer inertia of a mass of these guys smashed into people gives them bonus attacks. Because they basically pile over each other, and it's like a whole army of insects swarming people. It's really disgusting. Next up are the Termagants, another variation of the Gaunt genus from Warhammer 40K. These guys have they're weaker. They have speed of 6. Their close combat's only 2 attack dice, because they don't have as much fancy stuff. They're cheaper. They're also as puny, 2 defense, 1 life. They also still have the fleet of claw ability, so they get the D6 extra move if they want. They don't have the leap ability, because they carry what we call the flesh bore. It's a very kind of basically launches parasites at people. So these little insects attack people and burrow into them, eat them alive. So how they work is range of 5, attack 2, but they have what's called living ammunition, which you can almost translate literally right from 40K, in that when you fire, if you miss, you can re-roll a hit, in this case, for Heroescape. So you get 2 attack dice, and say an initial attack, in this case, both of them missed, you get to re-roll them again and see if you do additional damage. So nice. It's only if the thing misses do you get to re-roll it. And the last of the Tyranid figures is a Gene Stealer, another vicious, disgusting creature who also has a speed of 6, range of 1, attack of 4, because he's basically like a bigger brother of the Ormagant, a lot nastier, a lot more claws, and a lot more powerful claws, too. He has a defense of 4, so these guys are... Let's give him a defense of 3. Defense of 4 is a little high.
Wouldn't it be cool if Warhammer... This is Warhammer 40K stuff, right?
Yes.
Warhammer 40K would invade the Heroescape universe.
And that'd be fun.
And then all of the Heroescape universe figures have to unite together, I mean, everybody, and they have to fight all those guys. That would be sweet.
I can't see Games Workshop ever doing something.
It'd be interesting.
There are some rumors about some crazy stuff that happened this summer with their Games Workshop, stuff like that, but the cool thing is they have Fleet of Claw, too, because all the Tyranids are like super fast and just race up people, but they have what called Rending Claws, the most disgusting weapons in the world of Warhammer 40K. They're basically super hard, hardened claws. I don't know how they get the super hard. They literally rip through armor, through metal, anything. They just tear through it and rip it in half. Because basically in 40K, they can really do almost instant wounds and things to guys. So their cool ability is this. When they attack, roll attack dice normally. Oh, that was a crappy roll. Let's get at least some skulls out here. Okay, so for each skull you roll, you inflict the wound as normal. Then you re-roll each of those 2 dice. And the re-roll then, for each skull that comes up, the opponent's defense is reduced by 1. So that signifies not only... When for each skull you get on your initial attack, you re-roll it. If it comes up as a shield, then the opponent's defense is reduced by 1. So this is symbolizing the claws is ripping through your armor so worthless. Not only do they inflict the wound, but your defense is decreased as well. That's kind of how rending claws work in the universe. And the reason I go skull and shield is because that'll give it a probability of 1/6 occurring on an attack, the exact same probability that happens in Warhammer 40K. So I'll probably post the rules like that up on the Army Showcase, and that's enough for me talking. Let's go back to Ryan, have him finish up with Lord of the Rings.
Okay, Lord of the Rings. And it's too bad you don't have like a lot of Lord of the Rings figures, because I could go into like where you can use like the eagles as, you know, as flying, or the ents as, you know, I mean, these big towering things just wiping out, you know, all sorts of orcs, but unfortunately can't do that. But let me try and explain a little bit. The troll in the Mines of Moria, the Moria troll.
He's huge.
Not as huge as I'd like him for the Heroescape, because probably if you would use him as a Heroescape figure, he'd probably be the twice the size that he is.
Yeah, because Lord of the Rings figures are a little bit smaller in scale compared to the Heroescape figures.
But so I'd probably give him like a huge rating, almost like what Krug is. He's practically what Krug is in the game. So I'd probably give him something similar to what Krug has. Maybe since he's got... Well, Krug has a hammer too, doesn't he? No, he's got a sword.
Yeah, massive sword.
So I'd probably give Krug like some type of hammer ability or another. Give him since he's good with movement, I'd, you know, have him move around all over the place.
I'm laughing, that's what I really... Keep talking.
Hmm?
Keep talking. So yeah, just run around, smash people.
And then I have Gandalf here. And I'd probably give Gandalf... 4 attack with his sword, And since he has a good defense, probably give him, you know, 4-4. And probably give him some special ability like what Raylan has, since he has somewhat of a defense ability had against the Balrog. I'd probably give him some type of defense ability or other for that. And then I'd probably have some type of ability for his staff as well, just because he can be really wicked with it sometimes. Like a double attack or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, I probably could have made this stuff up earlier, but of course.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. So, but look for it on the website if I ever have time to.
It's a brainstorming session. Maybe stuff's useful, maybe it's not, but the idea is to let you expand on
basically, the idea is to have fun and just make up. That's what tabletop gaming is all about, pretty much. And then his movement would probably be, I'd say, normal movement, probably like 5 or 6 spaces. That's all I got right now.
Okay, well, I'll go and talk about the Tau Empire, the second army I play as in 40K. It's my primary army. I don't play as the Tyrians too often. I only have a very small amount of those pieces. But so, for the Tau Empire, so to give you a little background on them, they're the youngest empire, or the youngest, basically the youngest civilized race in the world of Warhammer 40,000, only being civilized 2,000 years at the time the game takes place. But they are the most advanced technology, because they basically have no basically taboos as to having lots of advanced weapons, advanced technology, advanced robotics, and things like some of the other races do. So they rely purely on lots of firepower, very powerful firepower, and that's basically all they have. So they don't have any good close combat, they don't have any magic abilities, they don't have any telepath or psychics, they have no demonic possessions or things that some of the races have. So they're basically straight-up guns and lots of them. So
nice.
The Tau Fire Warriors, they're their basic ground troop. So Tau, in general, are just disdained from close combat. Basically, they find it primitive, very brutish, and they don't want to be involved with it if it's at all possible. So their basic attack is only a range 1, attack 1. So if you get them in close combat, they're screwed. That's how they play in 40K. They have a defense of 3 for the Fire Warriors, so they have pretty advanced armor for the thing. They have 1 life, obviously, squads of 4, speed of 5. But they have the pulse rifle weapon. This is a secondary weapon they can use. It's not a special attack. So they can use this as long as they're not engaging an adjacent enemy. It has 2 profiles they can use. If they don't move, they can choose either one of these 2 profiles. If they move, they can only choose profile 2, because this reflects the whole rapid fire ability from World of Warhammer 40K. They have their first profile, which is profile number 1, which they cannot use if they move, is a range of 10, but attack of 2. So they can get a nice long kind of sniper shot. Or the profile 2, which they can use whether they move or not, is a range of 5, attack of 4. So it's basically either a kind of a long shot a little bit, or up close is spraying bullets like crazy. And like I said, he can't be used to engage adjacent enemies. Next up are the Crisis Suits.
These kind of remind me of like the Solberg guards a little bit.
Yeah, sort of. Except they're not robotics. There's actually little guys inside controlling these things.
Oh, kidding, okay.
So I think he hides in the torso somewhere. They're not actually just pure robots. Some of their guys are, but this guy isn't. This is a Crisis Suit, who is kind of like he's basically a battle suit. He's a little, maybe about... He'd probably be about maybe 8 to 10 feet, probably about 10 feet tall in real life, if you're curious. And they can be equipped with all sorts of weapons. So the configuration I got here would be a plasma rifle and a missile launcher. So plasma rifles are very powerful, but they're very powerful. Missile launchers are long-range weapons. In terms of their basic stats, they have a speed of 6 for walking around, and also these guys are bad at close combat too. So they have 2 attack dice for close combat, so it's a little bit better, but they're still pretty bad. They have a defense of 5 because they're basically a gigantic robot suit. they have 2 life, so they function kind of like as common heroes racing around. The plasma rifle has a rapid fire kind of ability, kind of like the Fire Warriors. They can use either profile whenever they want, which is a range of 8, attack of 3, or they can do a range of 4, attack of 6, whatever they want to do. The missile pod has a range of 12, but only has 2 attack dice. So these guys are pretty beasts when it comes to weapons. That's what they are. They're packed full of weapons. And the cool thing is they have the jetpack ability, so they can fly as normal, but also to reflect some of the abilities they have in 40K, after they fire, they can then move additional 3 hexes. So like in the world of 40K, the worst thing you do is say you're here, you fly up, you fire, you fly back and hide back where people can't shoot you back. So that's a neat little thing they have. And the last, two more Tau Empire guys quickly. The Broadside. These guys are basically Crisis Suits with a big gun on them.
That's
a pair of big guns. They're real guns. They're the most powerful weapons of any battle armor, most tanks.
Must be tough to move around, though, isn't it?
Yeah, they're very slow.
Yeah.
So these guys have what's called slow and purposeful movement, from assuming you give them the right equipment in the world of Warhammer 40K. So they move a random amount of distance, up to D6. So they possibly can move kind of quickly, but usually they end up moving maybe two or three spaces at most. They blow in close combat as well, range 1, attack 2, but they have a defense of 6. So these guys are rock solid and give them a life of 3 because they're a lot more beefy than the Crisis Suits. They have extra armor slapped on here. So the real guns are freaking sweet. They only have to give them an attack of 2, but they have a range of 12, so they basically can blow stuff out of the water. And they're twin-linked, so if you roll your 2 attack dice, an initial attack, if one misses, re-roll it to see if it hits again. And not only they're crushing power, so not only do the real gun shots inflict 2 hits for each skull rolled, each hit reduces your armor by your defense value by 1. So these things just rip through people and splatter them. Uh-huh. That's what they do in the game, they splatter people. And they also have the smart missile system, which has a range of 8, attack of 4. The cool thing about that is you don't need line of sight, because they basically fire them off, and they lock onto somebody and track down on them. Okay. So they can hide behind pillars and fire these things wherever they want. And the final little guy are the shield drones that basically they tag along and take hits. So they're pretty. They have no real attack ability. They have a speed of 6, a range effectively of 1, but they have no attack, so they can't fight. But they have a defense of 4, which is basically a mobile shield emitter. And the cool, they have 2 neat things about them. They bond to warriors. So if they start the turn next to a friendly Tau Empire unit that moves, they move along with that Tau Empire unit. So they can tag. So basically, they don't move by themselves. They tag along with some Tau figure. And their ability is a shield ability. So if someone were to attack this Tau Empire figure here that's with a shield drone next to it, the shield drone jumps in and takes a hit. So therefore, the shield drone, that's the idea of the shield drones. They're sacrificial hits. They die, so the big guy doesn't.
So they're just adjacent. And what would probably be the points for a drone like that?
I got unless it's like 25 for whatever reason. I don't know. I had to play with it. Because they have no attack ability, but the idea is how you play in 40K is you have them tag along with your big suits like this. So the first couple hits coming in can take the drones out, then the suits start taking damage. So that's the idea of them, to prolong those massive guns to make them live as long as possible.
And you have a Toro, he has to be adjacent to the fellow.
Yes,
too.
Okay. He has to be adjacent to the guy being hit in order to jump in and take the hit for him. So that's it for my Tau Empire guys. Why don't you finish up with your few little guys, and we'll call the show done.
Okay. Well, I suppose I can do a Hobbit. See, who do I got? I think I got Pippin has a scarf. Let's say with hobbits, since they are short and they're pretty insignificant, I probably actually give him like a runaway ability, like you do with the Solberg hounds.
Yeah.
And then I would give him like probably a 2 defense, 2 attack. And probably a lot of movement though. Since hobbits can get around if they need to, and what would be a fun ability to do is give them a special eating ability. I don't know how that would probably to hand food to like another person to give him an extra life or something.
I can use some of that.
You know, something like that. If you know Lord of the Rings, you know, book really well and the movies really well, you can add a lot of special abilities that are from the book and from the movies that can really help your characters. All these characters have like all these special technological things going on, and here you have these Stone Age guys. So you need something to give these guys an edge against guys like these.
Like for example, you know, with Frodo, he's got the mithril armor on. Is that how you pronounce it? Mithril.
Mithril, yeah.
Mithril armor. Yeah. So you give him like 5-6 defense dice, something ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like as like a special ability or something like that. Like he could be seen as normal, but he actually has a special defense ability that could be used. Yeah. Then, what about, you do Aragorn for a second. I don't know where he's at. Oh.
No, weird. This guy, I pulled him out. There he is in the back here, the greenest looking guy.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I don't know if that's the right colors or not. That's what the book told me to paint him as.
Yeah,
he's workshop full of doesn't look right.
And also for, like, all the members of the Fellowship of the Ring, since some of them are given the elven cloaks, like they can use that as a shield from unfriendly eyes. Pretty much, the enemies can't see them, so you could probably do a special ability to where you can roll a die, and then they have protective coating for that round. Kind of like what some of the agents have.
Oh yeah,
the female agents.
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. Those guys, yeah.
Yeah, they have a Shadow Mist ability. And then Aragorn, I would have him have his regular sword, but he could also come up with, because it's funny in how the book differs from the movies, because in the book, Aragorn has his, you know, mystic sword right away. And in the movie, it comes later on in Return of the King when he actually has it forged in the Fellowship of the Ring in the books. So if you want to stick to the books, you can actually have him have the sword hidden away and use it as a special ability to where he can have two swords in hand and just start slaying guys like crazy.
Kick you off. We're running out of time. My camera's yelling at us with the red lights. So anything else you want to add in quickly then?
No, Heroescape is fun.
All right. So hopefully that gives you some ideas to work with. Yep. Take in not only 40K, Lord of the Rings, toss the fantasy guys in there, maybe pull some MechWarrior figures. Go crazy. But
do Star Wars or whatever, you know. Expand on all universes.
See what happens come June with the new figures. And until then, if you got any questions, comments, send them to Jason at rocklesoftware.com. That's rocklesoftware.com. And with that, I'm Jason.
I'm Ryan.
Thanks for watching. We'll see you again in about 2 weeks on the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.
Copyright 2007-2008 Rocko Software, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License.
Schrodinger's Cat Paradox by CJAX is released under a Creative Commons license and was acquired from www.passefio.com.
Get your music down with everything is by the transfer and is acquired from www.passefio.com and is used under a Creative Commons license.